A big, powerful number this is. It first came out in the 1990s. It's called Let Me Entertain You, but it's still the song that Robbie Williams, who's a friend of this program, still the song that he uses to open most of his concerts. He's on a worldwide tour right now and probably listening to this program at some point. We're shifting gears just a little bit now. Anyone who listens to this program on a regular basis is familiar with the alien abduction scenario. The stories have been told so many times on this program and others. It's a theme that first burst into the public consciousness a couple of decades ago when the late great Bud Hopkins wrote about it. His books became bestsellers, classics in the genre, and then it really exploded when Whitley Strieber's book Communion sort of forever etched that image of a bug-eyed alien into our collective consciousness. It was a very intense time for that subject, alien abductions. Ufology, of course, didn't know what to make of it. There was a lot of resistance, I think, to old-school nuts and bolts saucer guys, but some very brave, stalwart academics forged ahead with it anyway. Dr. David Jacobs, for one, and especially Dr. John Mack, the late Dr. John Mack of Harvard Medical School. He put his professional reputation, his career, his tenure all on the line by having the courage to go ahead and interview dozens of experiencers and then wrote about it. He rejected the idea that it was all in their heads, much to the consternation of his colleagues at Harvard, and that helped change everything. But it feels like we don't hear much about it anymore. Certainly not in the mainstream news, my line of work. They don't have news stories in the evenings about alien abductions. So does that mean it's gone away, dwindled into nothing, that maybe the visitors have lost interest in us? Hardly. An organization known as FREE, co-founded by a legendary scientist and astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, is not only studying the phenomena, but it's offering help to those who are still grappling with this strange and frightening series of events. In some cases, as we've heard on this program, these experiences last a lifetime. It happens over and over to some people and affects different people in different ways, but more often than not, affecting them in demonstrable and profound ways. Coming up, someone who can tell us firsthand what this experience is like, not only for himself, but for his family members. They've seen it too. They've been through it with him. Ray Hernandez will tell us about his strange journey and about the organization known as FREE and the work it is doing. That's in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Ray Hernandez is an experiencer and a co-founder of FREE, as I mentioned, the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. He has a varied background, pretty interesting. Director of the Center for a Sustainable Urban Environment at the City University of New York, director of the Office of Community Environmental Planning for the City of New York. He's attended Rutgers College, Cornell University, was a PhD candidate at UC Berkeley, and this is the part that I know is a first for Coast to Coast. He's a tax attorney with the IRS. Ray Hernandez, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mr. Beth.
Can you put in a good word for me with the IRS?
Unless you die with more than $5 million of net assets, then I won't even touch you. I deal with estate taxes.
I think I'm safe. Let's start this. Before we talk about the organization FREE itself, I was reading the account of what you have been through. Man, it's pretty amazing. Yours started though late in your life. I mean, it doesn't start as a child as it does for a lot of people. At what point did this series of experiences start? Why don't you walk us through it?
Surely. It started March the 4th, 2012. So it's approximately a little bit over 3 years ago. And before that date, I had no interest whatsoever in UFOs, ETs, the paranormal, nothing of that sort. I was just a normal person leading a normal life. And then what had happened, I'll try to summarize. Basically, our dog was 16 years old, very, very sick, walking like an old lady. Had a stroke. And then my wife was up all night praying for the dog, hoping for a miracle. She's from Mexico. And then early in the morning, when we woke up, the dog was still paralyzed. And so she carried the dog down the stairs to see if she can go to the bathroom. And when she got down to the bottom of the stairs, she saw like a little mini craft inside our living room. And then she knelt down and started praying, and And then these lights started blinking on inside that little craft. And it was like the ship has an upside down U. So she ran, she was calling me and I was ignoring her. And she ran upstairs and pulled me down. So then I walked in front of her. And then when I she got to the bottom of the stairs and I was right next to her, she disappeared. And then I immediately looked in the corner of the room and I saw a floating plasma being. I call it a being because it controlled my mind and put me to sleep. And then I basically waved my hand at it. I said, BS. I then walked
You said
upstairs.
What? What did you say?
I waved my hand at it, like saying, this is nothing. It's BS. Oh. Which is not normal. It's not logical, but I'm just explaining exactly what happened.
Hold on a second. Slow down for a second. Describe describe what this thing looks like.
What I saw was different from what my wife saw. What I saw was an object that was translucent. It looked like pure plasma energy, multicolored inside. The shape was rectangular in shape, approximately 2 to 3 feet wide by 1.5 feet in height. And but it didn't have any external edges because it wasn't solid. It was translucent. It was pure energy.
What did she see? How did she see it?
She saw something differently. She saw a metallic object that was sort of an upside-down U, which was roughly 3 feet no, 2 feet wide by 3 feet in height. And it had two green lights in the middle. And then the reason for these discrepancies was that right in front of me, she disappeared. And then I went upstairs, and this thing put me to sleep. I went to sleep. And then when I woke up, it was like a hypnotist snaps the fingers and says, okay, kid, wake up. And I woke up, and I was fully conscious, unlike before. And then I ran downstairs because I realized, you know, I remembered what I had seen. And then when I got downstairs, my wife was dancing around the floor in Spanish saying, the angels cured her, the angels cured her. And the dog was now running around like a little teenager, jumping up and down and fully healed. And at that point, I was like, you know, what the hell just happened? You know, I got hit in the head by a 2x4. And there was mass confusion with my wife and I, because to her, I had never gone upstairs. To me, I was right behind her. And then when she looked down at the floor, the dog was cured and she was celebrating.
So you don't have any UFO books. You don't have it. You're not going to UFO flying saucer conferences. Your wife isn't interested in this. She sees this as a religious apparition. You're not a religious guy though either, are you?
I wasn't then at all. I'm now. I'm very, very spiritual because of a lot of experiences that happened. But before then, I had no concept. Maybe I watched an ancient alien show late at night when I couldn't get to sleep. But no conception at all of UFOs or of the paranormal, and my wife neither.
So tell me this: after the immediate that immediate event, how are you two dealing with it? When you the next morning at breakfast or something, what are you saying to each other? What the heck was that? How are you trying to explain it to each other?
Well, that's exactly what we were trying to do. It was total confusion. I didn't even know this concept of missing time. I realized it much later on. It was just massive confusion because she was insisting that she didn't see that plasma energy being, and I didn't see what she had seen. And then she didn't remember me going upstairs and going to bed. And as far as she knew, you know, I'd stayed there the whole time with her. So it was massive confusion. Now, what happened afterwards, that she had numerous encounters seeing crafts afterwards. One time it was very, very close. There was a huge craft of the size of a football stadium that she saw. She then went in Mexico, up to Mexico, and there with her family members, she had another encounter where everyone in the two-car caravan saw a huge craft descend from the sky, beamed the blue light in front of the lead car, then descended and took off. And she had two other experiences in Mexico. And meanwhile, for the next 6 months, I signed up immediately for MUFON once I did some research on the internet, trying to get some answers, but I never did get any answers. And I was basically reading UFO books afterwards and for the next 6 months and going to the internet, and all it did is just confuse me. until I had my own sighting of a huge, gigantic craft that I called down. It was I playfully did it without even thinking of it.
How long? Okay. How long after the initial experience did this happen?
That was in August, late August of 2012. And that was witnessed by my daughter and three other friends. And I did report that event to MUFON.
And so you're doing sort of playfully thinking, boy, that was really an interesting experience. Let's do that again. And you sort of mentally reach out to them or what?
Well, what happened was that I had a friend of mine who had all these parking tickets. And so I said, look, give me all those tickets. I'll do a motion to consolidate them. And you go to court, just one time. So he called me up. He says, Ray, I got all the tickets. And I said, okay, I'll wait for you outside. So I'm waiting outside, and then I'm thinking of the huge craft that my wife saw. Because she said it's between this tree and that tree. And, you know, it's like 2 blocks away or 3 blocks away. So it's a huge craft. And then I immediately thought of this guy, Prophet Yahweh, who I'd seen on YouTube the day before. And during the middle of the day, he was filming these crafts that he was calling down. But it was like a little tiny speck. So while I'm waiting for my friend at 9 o'clock at night, I said, oh, what the hell, you know, let me try it. So then I tried calling down a craft. But I wasn't serious. It was just, you know, okay, let me try. And then 15 minutes later, this huge craft, the size of a football stadium, appeared right on top of my neighbor's roof, like 5 feet from the roof. And then I heard a voice, which is the voice of my daughter, saying, Daddy, you and Mommy have seen UFOs. Next time you guys see a UFO, you call me. All right, Daddy, don't forget. So without even thinking, I go to my window. I start calling down my daughter because in my mind, she wants to see a UFO. And so she opens up the window. I tell her to run outside. There's a UFO. She runs outside. Now you got two people, you know, watching this huge thing, literally 30 feet from you. And then about 15 minutes later, my friend comes, not by himself, but with his wife and his 17-year-old daughter. And since that day, it's just been many, many experiences, mainly paranormal experiences.
Well, we'll cover some of those. But, I mean, did you think about grabbing a camera while this thing was hovering over the neighbor's house?
Well, everyone had a camera except my 10-year-old daughter. What people don't realize with these types of encounters is that your mind is completely controlled by these entities. For example, the neighbor under the house, they flick the light on. Right? They turn the light and they saw five people looking straight up at them. The normal thing to do would be to run over, knock on his door and say, Pablo, get the hell out. Look what's on top of your house. No one did that. My friends only stayed for 10 minutes. And they said, okay, we got things to do. That's normal. That's not normal. You're watching a once-in-a-lifetime event and all of a sudden you got to run, you know? And I didn't even question them leaving. It was like, okay, don't worry about those that paper I'm going to do. You know, we'll talk tomorrow. And then later on, I felt that mosquitoes were attacking me. And then I grabbed my daughter and I said, come on, let's go inside. These mosquitoes are killing me. Meanwhile, this huge football stadium craft is literally 30 feet away from me and is still glowing with all these lights. And once I got inside, my daughter goes to me, Daddy, there were no mosquitoes outside. And then I ran and I woke up. Basically, I was in a comatose state, kind of, where you're like half conscious and you don't realize what was happening. Then I fully woke up, just like when I was in my bed. I snapped out of it and I said, oh my God, what just happened? And then I ran, grabbed my camera, my video. I ran out and nothing was there. So that's why a lot of people don't understand of why you don't take pictures, why don't you act rationally, is because your mind is under control while you're having this contact.
So I wonder if that thing was physically there or not, or it was just projected into each of your minds.
Well, we don't know. All I know is that there was five people that saw that same craft, and we all made drawings afterwards. And it was pretty much the same drawing, just different conceptualizations of it. But it was a semi-translucent, made up initially of thousands and thousands of oblong streaks of light, which formed the whole shell of the craft. And there was white plasma in the middle of this craft. It was huge. It went back like maybe 600 meters, about 100 meters in height. And then it changed its appearances because my friends were like trying to make up all these silly scenarios of what it might be. So in my head, I was like, well, you better come up with something different because they don't believe you. And all of a sudden, immediately, the lights changed. And it was all thousands and thousands of stars the size of, 10 times the size of Venus, that were blinking on and off, on and off, on and off in a fraction of a second. So it's like they're reading your minds and they're acting accordingly.
In the days afterward, did you talk at length with your neighbors? Wow, that was really cool, and try to come to grips with it?
I was so embarrassed, because when you have an experience like this, you don't even tell your friends, you don't tell anyone, because they'll think you're crazy. Even with the incident of my dog, I didn't tell anyone. Slowly, little by little, I started telling folks. For example, there's a neighbor which lives very, very close to this house where we live, and the house where we saw that crack, that's right next door to our house. And I, lo and behold, like a year later, I asked her, I told her what had happened, and then I found out that her entire family has had contact experiences. And so the more people you ask, the more you find out that these types of experiences, not only that, but near-death experiences. I think near-death experiences are just as common as contact experiences, because now I'm talking to many, many people now, just out of the blue, asking them questions. And you know, the responses are just fascinating, because people are coming out of the woodwork with these types of experiences.
We'll come back to the possible connection to NDEs. Let me ask about the dog. You said this dog was ready to die, and then suddenly it has this encounter, and it's jumping around like a puppy. How long did that last?
It lasts almost an entire year. She declined the last 2 weeks. But beforehand, she was taking diuretics to admit the excess water in her body. She was taking actually Viagra for her heart. And she was walking like an old lady on crutches, like, you know, really struggling to walk. A couple of weeks later, we brought her to the vet. Dr. Phil Cruz, anybody could look him up. He knows the whole story. And he examined her, and he says, like, what happened to her? You know, and we didn't tell him at that time. And he checked her out, and then we weaned her off the medicines, and then he said, look, you know, she doesn't need to take the medicine. She's perfectly healthy. I don't know what happened, you know. And then a year later, we told him. And then he just thought that we were nuts, you know. But we did tell him eventually.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you're sort of out of the UFO closet here now. You work at the IRS. Have you had your boss or something call you in and say, what's the deal on this?
Oh, I spoke to him about it. I told him. And he told me a paranormal experience that he had about 2 years ago. And it dealt with his brother who had deceased. I won't go into the details because it's of a personal nature. But he knows about it, and he knows that paranormal experiences exist because of that. And I've told other attorneys in our group, and they just they have a hard time, you know, reasoning this, because I've had outstanding valuations with the IRS for many, many years now, which is the highest rating my supervisor could give. And I'm seen as I train the new employees, complicated tax matters. I go and do one-on-one assistance with other attorneys. So people look at me like, you know, this guy's really gone off the deep end now, you know. But I don't care, because it's real, and humanity needs to know that this phenomenon exists. And not only myself, I've spoken now with over 6 doctors that have had these encounters. I won't even count how many PhD psychologists. We have 5 physicists and 3, numerous professionals, but most of them are still hiding in the closet. And I think it's important for people to speak out about it and start an experiential liberation movement.
All right, Ray Hernandez, yes. We're going to take a break here in a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other paranormal experiences, including one involving the dead sister of your wife. It's summertime. The Beach Boys are mandatory, I would think. Sail on Sailor from 1973. We'll be back with more right after this. Don McLean, as you know, his big hit. We all know the words to it, of course. I think this song, though, is his masterpiece. It's called Vincent, about the life of painter Vincent van Gogh. We're talking with Ray Hernandez. He's one of the co-founders of an organization known as Free. And when we come back, we pick up the tale that he's telling about this a whole series of really weird experiences that led him to try to study and understand these various phenomena and to seek out how they might all be connected. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Ray Hernandez, so you have this experience of this odd object that's floating around in your house. It does something to your dog. You and your wife both see it. Then you, your wife, your daughter, and your neighbors all see this giant thing floating over the neighbor's house. But that's just the beginning of stuff that happens to you. Then a whole bunch of range of things happen. Let's start with the wife's dead sister.
Well, I don't want to be spending a lot of time on my personal experiences because we have a lot to talk about free. But basically, that was the only experience that I was aware of that happened before the contact that we had in our living room. And that was 2 years before my all experiences. No, not 2 years. It was maybe like 5 years beforehand. My wife's sister had died, and basically, her soul entered my wife.
And how do you know it was her?
Well, it's a lengthy story.
Well, actually, Ray, you know, we've got 2 hours to talk about Free. And in the
Okay.
next 2 hours, I'm going to talk all about Free. So I'm kind of hoping that you're going to help us set the table for the kinds of people
Sure,
whose
sure,
experiences are
sure.
explored by the organization.
What happened was that was all I did for 18 hours straight afterwards, after that experience, was to read books on near-death experiences and consciousness studies. I didn't go to the internet. I didn't watch TV. I didn't have TV at that time. I didn't socialize. All I did was just read those books. I don't know why. Okay. And then the result of it was for 3 days in a row, the first three people I ever talked to about NDEs, the first one was my daughter's pediatrician, Dr. Herrera here in Miami. She told me about her NDE. I was the very first person. And then the second person, at a church dinner, this person named Max, then he told me about his NDE. And then the third day, this is 3 days in a row, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, December 21st, December 22nd, and December 23rd, 2012, that the last one was my own father. And then that's when I finally realized that this is all a setup job, because what are the statistical probabilities of the very first three people you ever talked to about near-death experiences? 3 days in a row, each of them have had a near-death experience. And that occurred after you were basically like a crazy man reading 12 to 18 hours a day, all these books on near-death experiences and consciousness studies. And that was my first of these paranormal experiences that began.
So these things happen to you and your family. You start reading everything you can, but you're also casting sort of a wide net. You're talking to other people about it. You start interacting with other folks who have a variety of experiences. Among them is an MRI radiological technician at a hospital in Miami.
Correct. Up to that point, I had not spoken with anyone about my experiences. The first person was the pediatrician. That was on a Friday. The second person was Max, who works as an MRI and radiologist. And then he told me about his near-death experiences of his mother, and he had never spoken to anybody before about that experience. And then the third day was my own father. And so it's these types of experiences that I had very, very frequently. It was after that series, those 3 days, then I started to ask other people, because if it happened to these three people, you know, my daughter's pediatrician, this guy that I've known, my wife knew his wife, but I never met the fellow. I met him at the church dinner, and subsequently he's become a good friend of mine. And then my own father. And so after I realized that, I said, this thing must be more common. It's just people are not talking about it. And then I've met tons of people that have had NDEs, and tons of people that have had UFO-related contact experiences, just
So,
in Miami.
So how do you how does this end up with you and Free being associated with each other? How did you make that connection?
Well, what had happened was, and again, this is another crazy experience, quote unquote. One day in May in 2013 now, I was driving down interstate going in the middle of a traffic jam to go to downtown Miami. And then I got my first ever, what I call a download, an ET telegram, which is a voice coming into my head. And then there was like a video that I saw associated with it. And basically, it told me I had to tell humanity of the relationship between ETs, the spirit world, and consciousness, you know, quantum physics. And then the video was that I was inside a spinning wheel. And then that same day, and you could interview Mary about it later on when you talk to her, she got an email that I had sent her 7 months beforehand, but she got it that same day that I got that download. And she said, "Dear Ray, I apologize for responding to this email 7 months late, but it just popped up on my screen." And then that was the first time I ever talked to someone outside of this other experiencer, who was the only one that I'd been talking to at that time, about what had happened to me, a researcher, outside of the person from MUFON. But that was just one day listening to a couple of our experiences. But by then I had tons of experiences. And then the very next day I got a phone call from Dr. Rudy Shields. And Rudy's now our executive director of FREE. And Rudy is an emeritus professor of astrophysics at Harvard. And so he called me. I didn't even remember who this guy was. I know now that Mary had mentioned it to him. So then he tried to tell me that my download that I got, where all the various modalities that I had in that picture that was inside that wheel, all the different ways that people can have contact with non-human intelligent beings through near-death experiences, through remote viewing, through out-of-body experiences, through mystical meditation, through hallucinogens, et cetera, all these different ways where people are having contact with non-human intelligent beings. So what he told me was that that's the quantum hologram that I was experiencing, and he and Dr. Edgar Mitchell were adherents to it and early proponents of that quantum hologram theory of physics and consciousness, and that explains that all the various modalities of contact experiences are all interrelated. So what he told me was that my download was 100% correct according to the latest advanced theories of physics. And then he gave me a telephone number. He said, "Write this down," and I wrote it down. He says, "That's the telephone number of my mentor," and his mentor was Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And he says, "I'm going to call Edgar and I'm going to tell him what just happened. I'm going to send him an email. So it's important for you to give him a call as well." And Rudy encouraged me to implement that download that I got, which was to tell humanity of the relationship between these ETs and the spirit world and quantum physics consciousness. He says, you know, to do an organization to spread that. I told him, "I have no idea what I'm going to do. They didn't tell me to do that. They didn't tell me to form an organization." He says, "Don't worry. It'll come to you once you figure it out." So then the next, that same afternoon, I called Edgar Mitchell, which I hadn't even, you know, spoken with him before. And then he invited me to his house because Rudy had contacted him. And so the next day I was at Edgar's house and I spent half the day at his house. And he was telling me, you know, his whole history of how he grew up in Roswell, the two stores that his, family had, how he had his little pony. And he showed me pictures of his pony, how he was an astronaut, the Roswell crash, how he came back, I guess in 71 and he met with all these, old-timers that came out of the woodworks trying to talk to him on a personal nature about what happened in Roswell. And it just went on and on and on. He told me about his somatic experience out in space. And at the end of it all, he says, "Look, Ray, you need to do something about this, and I will help you. Rudy and I discussed it. We will be your members of an advisory board." And I said, "Well, I have no idea what I'm going to be doing." And he told me the same thing that Rudy said, that, you know, it'll come to you. So that's how FREE got started, basically.
Let me ask you this. Why do you, I guess, why do you assume that it's ET? I mean...
No, I'm just using that as a short acronym.
Right.
But
It's non-human intelligence of some sort.
correct. It's a non-human intelligent being. Almost everybody associated in our board of directors, including Dr. Mitchell and Rudy Shields, their hypotheses is that it's a multidimensional entity, and it might be even thought-driven, you know, with our own interactions on consciousness. It's a phenomenon so complicated that Edgar has told me many, many times. He says, Ray, we only know one grain of sand in a whole beach of this phenomenon. And then when you add the multiverse, you're going to be having almost an infinite amount of beaches. So anyone that pretends to know, you know, what this phenomenon is all about, they don't have any type of grasp of what they're dealing with.
Well, I can't agree with you more on that. So you download this sort of quantum wheel thing. The next thing you know, Dr. Rudy Shields of Harvard calls you up and says, yeah,
at 9:30 in the morning.
I know all about this. We've been working on this too. That's pretty odd coincidence, beyond a coincidence.
That's how my 3 years have been. It's one coincidence after another.
Are you still having experiences?
Oh, yes. The last 4 weeks, I've met four experiencers, all Cubans. One is a doctor. The other one is a 75-year-old man. This other is this guy that I helped out with some legal advice 3 years ago. I haven't spoken to him in 3 years. And goodness, where's the fourth one? This other Cuban doctor. All experiences. And again, it's all happened with, you know, a 1 month period. And two of them have had their family. One of them has had a three NDEs, near death experiences, and then another one, his wife has had a near death experience, and numerous contact with these non-human intelligent beings. And he's had numerous paranormal experiences. That's the Cuban doctor.
So it's
happening very frequently now.
So why do you think it has appeared to you that it's come into your head that you've been allowed to see it? Why do you think it's you and a few other people and not everyone?
Well, I can't answer that question. The only thing is that I talk to tons of people, and I'm very open about it. I don't care, you know. I'm very solid in terms of my my job. I do a good job. I'm an excellent employee. I'm very secure of who I am. All of my family members have had these experiences, so they can't be going crazy together with me. I've had numerous witnesses that have seen these things. So it's a valid phenomenon, except that humanity is not awakened to this. They just don't know to the large extent that this is happening. All these people I've mentioned over the last 4 weeks, all of them have told no one else.
What do you think the agenda is? That whatever this intelligence is, that it's decided it's time for us to wake up? What's going on?
Well, let me tell you, I can't give you the exact details from our research study. We have basically pretty much the first ever large-scale scientific academic research study that's ever been done, because there's almost nothing that's been published scientifically, academically, about this phenomenon. And hopefully Mary and John Klimo can go into some of those details. But your prior guest talked about near-death experiences, okay? Our preliminary findings have resulted in free-forming an independent subcommittee to focus at the relationship of NDEs and the paranormal and UFO-related contact phenomenon, okay? That's how profound the numbers we got on that relationship, okay? And healing aspects, okay? Let me just mention there's three members of FREE that have had healing in their family, okay? And they haven't come out publicly with it. Let me talk about two individuals that are good friends of mine that have come out publicly with healings. Chris Bledsoe, who lives in North Carolina, he's publicly gone out that these ETs cured him of Crohn's disease. Reverend Michael Carter, I think he's been appeared on Coast to Coast before. He's an ordained minister, has his own congregation. He was healed by the ETs. He had one leg that was twice the size of the other. And this big, tall, blue being, I think it was blue, touched him and knocked him out. And when he woke up, his leg was normal. And then, as I said before, there's two members of our prestigious panel of our free board of directors have had healings, but they haven't gone publicly with it. So that's another relationship that we've seen here. And I could go on and on and on, George, with information that we've received from this survey that will rock ufology, just like the work of David Jacobs and Bob Hopkins and Dr. Mack rocked ufology in that time. The data that we have received from this research study is going to rock what is known as ufology.
It well, you know, you know how those guys were received initially. It was not exactly rolling out the red carpet for them. Ufology can be pretty stodgy at times, and I can imagine how the stuff that you're working on is not going to be well received by everyone.
Sure, they have to understand who's involved here. We have five academics in this group. It's not just Little Ray Hernandez or Joe Schmo. This is Dr. Rudy Shields, Edgar Mitchell, Dr. John Klimo. We have a neuroscientist, Bob Davis, involved here. Several other PhDs. We have Kathleen Martin, Mary Ellen, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Mary Rodwell, Giorgio Piacenza. These are highly respected individuals in this field. Also, we have a huge sample that we have already. We've gotten 1,380 individuals in English that have responded to this survey. We've had also the survey running in Spanish, and we just launched in French. So, and we're getting translations in Mandarin and Portuguese, and we're looking for translators in other languages as well. So this is a multinational, multilingual research study headed up by numerous academics, and we have numerous control groups, numerous types of standards that are being applied to the study. It's never been done before.
So, what will you know at the end? What do you hope to know? What's the answer that? What's the question you have to have, hope to have the answer to?
Well, let me respond a certain way. By the end of the survey, we'll have a better understanding of what questions to ask. Because right now, it's very difficult to even know what questions to ask because this phenomenon has been so complicated. It's so complicated because individuals have focused on certain items for so many, many years. They focused on the abduction phenomenon. Now, the data that we've got shown that it's much, much more complicated than just purely abduction. Like in my case, okay, we had inside our house, my wife has seen this entity. And she had missing time, and she wasn't there. I didn't. I have no conscious recollection of being abducted. And that's the vast majority of people that have taken these surveys. Okay, they have not been abducted, but yet they've had contact. Okay, so it's a much more complicated phenomenon than what a lot of people think it is. So at the end of it, we hope to get some basic information of what this information, this contact experience is about. Right now, I think we're kind of clueless because we haven't had this type of data before. It's been, for example, Dr. Mack in his two books, his first book had 11 experiencers that he interviewed. His second book is not a huge sample, but again, it was a limited amount of people that he basically did comparative interviews on. So we know very little about it. I mean, Kathleen Martin, who's a member of our board, she did a book with Denise Stoner titled Alien Abduction Files. They had 50 individuals that they used, and 25 individuals were a control group. So it's only 50 experiencers. So it's a lot of the previous studies were quite limited in terms of its scope and its range of what questions to ask. Here, we've already asked a total of almost 600 questions. And by the time we're done, we're going to be asking over 1,000 questions. And on top of that, we're going to be doing formal interviews one-on-one. We're going to have control groups. We're going to have a battery of mental health assessments. So this is the full gambit. So at the end of this, we hope to have a comparative multinational, multilingual assessment of what is going on. And we might not be able to address that question that you asked me, but at least we'll have a better idea of what questions to ask.
Well, I'll tell you, Ray, that the idea of a unified theory of the paranormal is something that I've always been interested in. I don't know if you're familiar with the writing about the ranch in Utah, the Skinwalker Ranch stuff, but it's a place where all of the kinds of phenomena that you're describing all happened in one place, and it was almost as if it's trying to tell us that all this is connected, and now I'm glad to hear that you're studying and looking for that kind of connection. Ray Hernandez of FREE, thank you very much. We'll have you back again, I hope, when you got some more information to share with us.
Thank you, George. And just to let you know, each and every one of our board of directors believe that that relationship exists.
All right. Well, we're going to hear more about that in just a moment with two of your colleagues from Free. Doobie Brothers, take us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM.